Cassie, and it's just a jump to the left.
And I'm Matthew, and it's a step to the right.
And welcome to You Haven't Seen This, a podcast where this sibling duo talks about movies that only one of them have seen.
This week is part one of our Halloween Spooktacular.
Ooh.
Where we're coming back for a pair of short episodes of some fun, spooky films that fit our criteria. So, ooh.
And what would that film be today, Matthew?
Yes, today we are reviewing the 1975 musical comedy horror film, box office bomb turned midnight cult classic, The Rocky Horror Picture Show. Any thoughts, Cassie, going into this?
Well, I haven't seen this, so I was going to ask you, like, what are your thoughts? Why did you want to watch this?
Yes. It's been a while since we've recorded. It's like, wait, how do we do podcast? How do I podcast?
They don't need to know that. Cut that out.
It's fine. It's fine. Well, first off, I wanted to do some Halloween stuff. I wanted to do some holiday stuff, because holiday episodes are fun. But we swiftly ran out of Christmas options after Polar Express.
Yep.
So I was like, Halloween, let's do it. But I'm not a big, like, horror slasher scary movie person. You aren't either.
Yeah, so I'm really glad that you didn't make me watch one of those.
Yes. So, you know, there were only some things we could see. And this is one of them. Rocky Horror is just, it's a very fun movie. You know, it's one of those movies that just has sort of embedded itself in the culture for whatever reason. This kind of maybe goes back a little to the early days when we were thinking about this podcast, and it was very like, movies you need to see, movies you haven't seen, and I'm like educating you a little bit. That's very what this episode is, educating you.
I'm being learned. That's what I'm hearing.
You're being learned.
Mm-hmm.
You are losing your Rocky virginity. Congratulations.
I'd like for you to not say that again.
Unfortunately, that's what they say, so okay. I can still cut it.
Okay.
When you go to your first Rocky Horror screening, you are a Rocky virgin, so...
Well. Hey.
On that note, you are gonna not get the ideal first introduction to Rocky Horror, because we are just going to watch the movie, and you will see, but the ideal way to watch Rocky Horror is surrounded by a bunch of college students in corsets and fishnets, who are all maybe a lot drunk, and just yelling things at you.
See, okay, because of course, this is my first time seeing it, but I have heard about kind of the midnight showings of Rocky Horror and all the stuff you do there. And of course, I had no, like, I would read the stuff that you would do, but I was like, I don't know when that happens. I don't understand what you're referring to when you say that. So, you know, later on in my life, perhaps I will have the official Rocky Horror viewing experience. But for right now, dipping a toe in.
Yes, you get in a tote, you'll see the movie, which is maybe the least essential part of any Shadowcast screening.
That's what I assume, because from what I've heard of them, it seems like a wild in time.
It is. I've only managed to go once while in college, but it is a truly transcendent time.
I think I have, I've never been to one, but I think I've walked past several, like, Rocky Horror shadow casts. Like, I have either, like, walked past, like, a screen and someone was, you know, doing it, like, someone was, you know, acting in front of it, or I've been in a theater and I've seen someone in a costume just run by. And I remember being very confused. But then when learning about it, like the kind of the showings, I was like, oh, that's probably what that was. Didn't really make me less confused, but gave me just that little bit of knowledge to be like, oh, so that's why that person in the corset and fishnets was just running through a movie theater. That makes sense.
Yes, those people are great, and those people are the reason this movie like still exists in the public consciousness, if I may give you a little history before we dive in.
I would love it.
So Rocky Horror was the Rocky Horror Picture Show was released in 1975. The Rocky Horror Show is the musical it was based off of, which came out just a couple years earlier in 73, and was like a pretty good success, you know, for the time, like kind of low budget artsy theater. It actually did pretty well. These productions ran for a decent amount of time. You know, they're not putting up Phantom numbers, but very few is.
R.I.P. to Phantom. Let's just put that in there real quick,
Oh
but you know,
God,
go
yeah,
back.
rip Phantom.
Rip.
That's wild. Anyway, this is not our Phantom episode. Go listen to Adapt or Die
Yeah.
for my thoughts on Phantom of the Opera. So then they decided, you know, as it's getting popular, they're like, hey, let's make a movie out of it. So they make this movie, and it kind of bombs hard. It just nowhere, just audiences aren't interested in it, and it doesn't really open in a lot of places. So this was put out by 20th Century Fox, which had kind of a little policy at the time that whatever, you can just use any film we have, like a theater can request to use it. You know, they can use films we have in our archives and just show them. And because of this, like, weird kids in like New York were like, this is funny, we're having a fun time, and they just started shouting things at the screen. And it just caught on, and it kept going and going and building and moving to other cities. So it really was a kind of, this is a true like cult phenomenon in like, this is before the internet, this is before, you know, mass media really. And because of this little fluke that, like, Fox never pulled it from release because it just bombed hard. So they were like, whatever, just, yeah, you can keep using this movie that we have made zero money off of, whatever. It kind of turned into this phenomenon where there's the whole, like, counterpoint script that people have, and people dress up doing the shadow cast, and it's, you know, become this whole thing that, you know, this movie that is almost 50 years old now, you know, random college kids are like, well, of course we have to do a Rocky Horror. It's fun.
I love that. That was very informative. I hate that we have to thank people from New York for something. Maybe that's my California pride,
You know
but
what? They're 70s New Yorkers. They're okay.
okay. I'll allow it. But yeah, like I've said, that history was new to me, and I know very little. Like I know that the Rocky Horror Picture Show is a thing. I know that shadow casts happen and have walked by like two of them, been confused, learned what they were, was only marginally less confused afterward. I kind of know the. I can't even say I know the gist, because I really don't.
This
So
is the best way to go into it.
I'm really going in, I think, as blind as I can. So I think I'm open to whatever.
Let's do it. Let's just dive on in. Let's, shall we say, do the time warp again.
I say we will.
It's just a jump to the left. With your hands on your hips.
And we are back from our trip to Transylvania. And,
I feel like a new person.
much like Brad and Janet, you have been
changed in some indescribable way.
Fundamentally, but yes, also indescribable.
You are a different person than when you were when you entered the manor.
I would say that's correct.
What's really funny is I didn't even know you had fishnets, and suddenly you're wearing them.
You know, I actually didn't. They just appeared. I can't take them off.
That happens to me. I have a drawer that I'm filling up with fishnets from the number of times I've seen this movie.
Yeah, man, I'm going to have to clean out part of my closet because it's going to get ridiculous. I can already tell.
So, Cassie, you have just seen Rocky Horror. What do you think?
I got many thoughts. I guess my kind of first thoughts that I want to talk about are just because this is a movie musical, I think it's only fitting that we talk about the music. I would say that the soundtrack of this movie is not my favorite, but letting it kind of steep a little, it's still very memorable. I think that even though I wasn't like the biggest fan of all the music, I did still enjoy it. None of the songs were like, ooh, like, no ma'am, this was bad. They were all good. And kind of having sat with it, like, since, you know, watching it and then recording this, I'm kind of thinking like, no, I can remember a lot of the songs, and I can remember how that one goes. And so I do kind of like it. So I do think the music is good. Like I said, not my favorite movie musical and not the most memorable soundtrack, but it is pretty good. And of course you have, you know, the absolute hit that is The Time Warp.
Yeah.
Which, okay, I need to just interject very slightly today. So I was thinking when I was just kind of collecting my thoughts about the movie, I was thinking about how The Time Warp is such an iconic song. And it's very, you know, just iconic just generally if you know Rocky Horror, but also like if you were in musical theater. And as I think we have probably talked about on the podcast before, I am a recovering theater kid. and I was just thinking today, because I remember that, you know, you are too. I was just remembering today that you did The Time Warp in your time with theater, but I was just remembering today, and I felt so just offended and just like shocked when I realized that my drama teacher, who was different than yours, I just remembered like, she never made us Time Warp. Of all the things that we had to do in that class, she never gave us that quintessential theater kid experience. Because I feel like The Time Warp, not only is it an instructional dance, and so it's easy to dance to, like, it's just a jump to the left and a step to the right. Like, you know what to do because it's the directions are there. It's like the cha-cha slide. But I feel like it's one of those, like, quintessential musical theater dances. Like, it's one of those ones where if you know theater, if you've danced, if you've played music, you know this. Like, we all know, like, it's like audition from a chorus line and some of the stuff from West Side Story and like all of the, just these like musical theater dances that like, you know, you have to know, you're supposed to know.
And even if you're not a theater kid, like I am sure like our parents could do The Time Warp and they're not, you know, theater dorks.
Absolutely. Like we... Because Dad has done The Time Warp. He has.
Yes, absolutely.
We have witnessed him do The Time Warp when we have talked about this movie.
Exactly. When I was watching it, like, my roommate was just, like, in the background, like, eating dinner and kind of watching with me. And as soon as it got to The Time Warp, she was just like, I have to stop. I have to get up. And I was up, too. And I'm like, you can't not do The Time Warp.
Exactly. And so I texted my teacher about that today because I have her number and we still talk to each other. And I was like, I feel like offended. I feel let down. You never made us Time Warp. Like all of the things you had us do and you never had us Time Warp. And she was like, was I supposed to? And I was just like, yes. Yes. You made us do Annie. Like you could have at least made us do The Time Warp. I love my theater teacher. She's a wonderful woman. She's still a really great mentor and just resource in my life. But I will say, you know, that's, you know, she led us astray in that moment. When I just think back and I was like, one, we didn't do a lot of the quintessential theater dances because my class was not very theater kid-y. But also I'm like, could you have not made us do that? Because it's also a great song. Like I said, instructional dance. It would have been easy. We could have done it. Come on, man. You know, pull yourself together. That's how I was feeling. So those are my again recovering theater kid thoughts about the time warp. But like I was saying, the music in this musical, pretty good. I'd say it's pretty middle of the road, but memorable.
Yeah. I feel the need to just explain, like, I didn't do Rocky Horror. I've never been in, like, a shadow cast. This was in, like, the Time Warp was, like, one song in, like, a class review sort of thing. So
yes, yeah.
There was a number of things.
Yes.
There were a number of dances in that.
But I do remember that you did the Time Warp. You didn't do Rocky Horror, but you did do the Time Warp. And so that's why I was like, we never got to do that. We were robbed.
Yeah. That was a one night only thing. Except whenever I hear the Time Warp, then it's a reprise.
Exactly.
I do want to talk a little bit about the music, because it is kind of interesting. This is a musical from the 70s, and the 70s, in terms of musicals, and especially movie musicals, is this really interesting kind of sea change. Because, like, earlier, you know, the 40s and 50s, it's Rodgers and Hammerstein, it's all of these big, kind of beautiful, elegant musicals. And you even see that in Hollywood. It's all these big, sort of epic, you know, productions that even going into the 60s, while they're certainly dying out, they're still, you know, occasionally you get some ones popping up now and then. But this is 75. This is well past when, like, the big Broadway musical is gone. And even on Broadway itself, like, everything's getting a lot more experimental. This is only a couple years after, like, Hair. Movie-wise, this is right around when, like, when the adaptation of Cabaret comes out, and this is around when, like, Stephen Sondheim is starting to do a lot of his stuff. So I think it's interesting. What makes the music so interesting to me is there really isn't any other, like, musical for a while that rocks this hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's like maybe Hair and, like, Grease if you squint at it, but even then I don't think Grease, like, rocks hard.
Yeah, I did Grease, and I really liked Hair, and they're not as rock heavy as Rocky Horror.
Exactly. It really is like a rock musical that we wouldn't see done again for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what helps make it so distinct is, you know, the Time Warp, that, like, dunk 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 dunk, that little, like, guitar riff is very, like, early punk.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, makes perfect sense, because they're doing the show in the early 70s in England, which is, like, the birth of the punk scene.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what helps make this musical really, like, stand out, musically at least.
Yeah, I would have to agree. It's definitely, it's different than anything else at the time or that had come before it, and I think that's what makes it so interesting.
That's part of why I think people didn't know what to make of it, mm-hmm. when it first came out, why it was kind of a flop, but also why it endured, because there's really, like, nothing else like it, and so that's why it's so, like, memorable and it grabs you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, kind of talking about the kind of enduring power of Rocky Horror, like, why did it kind of why is it still kind of a movie that we talk about now?
Oh man, we are getting into the big questions, aren't we?
I mean maybe a little bit. I don't know. You're the expert on this, so I'm just asking some questions.
I think it's one of those things that has to be, like, seen to really be believed. Mm-hmm. The whole, like, midnight screening phenomenon really is this, like, beautiful sense of community and how all these little callbacks and jokes have been kind of built up over the years to the point where, like, a room full of 20-somethings are repeating jokes that were made in, like, a midnight theater in New York in, like, 1980. Mm-hmm. Because it's been this kind of telephone. And that's kind of why I love it so much. There's something really beautiful about that kind of hand-to-hand through the generations. It's like generations of outcasts and misfits finding this, like, weird thing to all enjoy. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of why it's endured. Because it's a story about, it's a story ultimately about, like, misfits and outcasts where the outcasts win. I mean, the opening shots are, like, the most boring, you know, middle America wedding possible. And then, you know, Brad and Janet get together. They're so beautiful, so clean cut. And then the last we see of them is, like, in corsets and fishnets and garish makeup, just writhing on the ground, like, what happened? Mm-hmm. Which is a really good, like, parallel to how it must have felt to watch this movie for the first time. Mm-hmm. You come in, you're like, okay, it's a fun little musical, it's nice, and then somewhere in that almost 2 hours, you are a different person when you come out of that. You're like, what have I witnessed?
Yeah, no matter how much you like the movie, you have a pre-Rocky Horror and a post-Rocky Horror phase of your life.
I also think in terms of shocking, you have to see this to believe it kind of movies, it's fairly tame and it's fairly accessible.
Yeah.
It's not something like The Room, which has garnered a lot of cult following now, for being just god-awful. Mm-hmm. And it's not something like Pink Flamingos or other John Waters movies, where it's like, there's some stuff in that is, like, genuinely disturbing. Mm-hmm. It's, like, fundamentally accessible. There's nothing so over the top when you compare it to, like, a lot of mainstream movies. But everything is in such an anarchic punk kind of sense that, I don't know, it just gives it kind of walks that fine line. It's a bad movie that, like, kind of knows it's bad because it's this loving tribute to other sincerely bad, you know, sci-fi movies of a bygone era. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on that I think no one has really been able to replicate what this movie is trying to do. And I think that's why it's endured so long.
Yeah, I would have to say that I agree. So you kind of, I guess, sort of started to answer this, but I guess I'll ask the question anyway. So we live in the era of the remake and we all have different thoughts about that, but I'm just wondering, like, I know that there is a Rocky Horror Picture Show remake. I know that they have done it again. But I just wanted to get your opinions, not necessarily on the remake itself, but you can talk to that. But just A, is Rocky Horror a movie that can be remade? And B, should Rocky Horror be a movie that is remade with a modern audience in mind?
So yes, they did do TV tribute remake kind of in 2016 on, I believe it was on Fox.
I think so.
Remember when they would do, this was the peak era of, like, TV musicals.
Yeah. Rent Live, which, like, Grease Live, all them.
Yeah, the live musicals, which, like, most of them were kind of bad, mm-hmm. but Now we don't get them anymore, and I do kind of miss them a little bit.
Yeah, I would have to say I agree.
I would love to have seen them, like, exhaust the very easy ones and start going into the more ambitious ones.
Mm-hmm.
Which they were kind of starting to do. But anyway, this is completely beside the point. This question kind of actually brings to mind a New York Times article or something I read that was reviewing, like, a theater festival where they were doing, not in rep, but, like, at the same time, like, on different stages. It was, like, there was a production of The Music Man and there was a production of The Rocky Horror Show going on at the same time. And the article was kind of built on, there's this festival and, you know, one of the shows being produced is this very nostalgic, familiar, fun family kind of affair, and the other one is this kind of dark, subversive, a little more adult tone to it. And the sort of twist was, haha, the dark, subversive one is how we've done The Music Man and played up a lot of different elements that are in the original text, and the familiar, almost one you could take the whole family to, is Rocky Horror.
Mm.
I think any remake of this movie is gonna have the issue that, like, this has become so ingrained in the public consciousness, and it's a show you're supposed to, like, go and have fun with, and it's a very leave your brain at the door kind of show. I think we'll probably get into this a little more.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of elements of Rocky Horror that I think if they were played in a movie that takes itself a little bit more seriously would be really difficult to square with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because they're in this movie that has a very anarchic sense of everything of itself, I think you're able to kind of look past that, as it's like, it's part of the whole vibe. And has it aged super well? Maybe not, but also, like, it's all part of the experience. So it's a very, like, here's the movie, take it or leave it, kind of. And I think that is what any sort of remake would have to come up against, is that you would have to actually then look at the whole text and look at it as pieces, as opposed to looking at this whole movie as, like, one artistic unit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why that Fox remake was, like, part remake, but also, like, a lot of it was just a tribute to it. I mean, they even had, like, audience participations in it, you know, in this, like, in the show, they would cut to an audience doing the gags, and it's like, yeah, they know what this is. They're not looking to, like, radically reinterpret this text. It's, we're all here to have fun and not really think about it.
Yeah, so I guess kind of what I'm hearing is that a remake is possible, but there's kind of a lot of obstacles that you would come up against just because of just the tone of Rocky Horror, having to translate that to an adaptation. And it kind of seems like it wouldn't be able to be a sort of one for one that I feel like a lot of remakes try and do to some capacity. I think just because of everything that went into Rocky Horror, if you tried to do it again today, I think, like, a lot of remakes it wouldn't do well, but I think it would be maybe a particular type of not doing well just because of,
yeah,
everything, like, everything together can't be redone.
Yeah, I think there's a reason we have gotten, like, a couple of revivals of the stage show,
mm-hmm,
and that have really worked and been really fun. Whereas we haven't really seen, like, anyone trying to make the movie again. Even the TV one was, if you go and watch it, a lot of it is just like, okay, so it's the exact same movie with just different actors in it.
Mm-hmm.
Although Tim Curry,
Don't you disrespect Tim Curry like that.
Although Tim Curry is in both of them. Can we talk about Tim Curry for a hot second?
We need to. I've been itching to.
Let's dive into it.
I see you shiver with anticipation.
I want to say Tim Curry is a national treasure, but he's not my national treasure, so he's a multinational treasure. I love Tim Curry. Every and anything he's been in has just been great. He's fantastic in this movie. He makes the movie. Frankenfurter's the best character, hands down. Is amazing. He gives a fantastic performance. His voice is great. This is the Tim Curry appreciation podcast now.
Honestly, good. Let's get into it. He is the best part of the film, honestly.
Yeah, no, like, not even joking. Like, he, without a doubt, makes the film. If someone else had been Frankenfurter, this whole film would not have felt the same.
Oh God, absolutely not. I don't even know who could be Frankenfurter.
No.
It's like, I don't want to even imagine that world where it's not this actor in this role. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, he's perfect.
Yes. And you know, a lot of times, you know, people will say that like, oh, you know, no one could have done this role like him. And I feel like sometimes it seems a little passé to do that. Just like, oh, whatever, you know, this is an actor or an actress that you like. But like, we're being pretty serious on this one, where he gives a performance that is really the glue that holds the movie together.
You cannot take your eyes off of him.
No.
When he is on screen, it's like, he's all I want to look at.
And he's not even pulling focus, like, because he's being outlandish or just because he's wearing just, you know, the most elaborate costume, which, by the way, fantastic. I know it's very RuPaul's Reveal Race when he has that little coat, that little cape on over, and then he reveals, but, you know, it's fine. But, like, he is just, he's just magnetic. Like, you want to look at him, you have to look at him. You have, like, no choice. Who else are you going to look at? What else are you going to, like, fix your eyes on when he's anywhere on screen? There's really no comparison. The other actors do a great job. They give good performances, but they can't touch what Tim Curry did.
Yeah. I think everyone is well cast and mm-hmm. giving it their all. They're all fantastic. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just, it's the, like, even if everyone was firing at a 10 constantly, Tim Curry's at, like, a 15.
Exactly.
From the moment he steps down, like you said, in that RuPaul's Reveal Race coat.
Yeah. Ookie spooky, Babadookie. Like, it's just like, we know there's a reveal. We know that you're lip-syncing for the crown. It's like, we know that Sacha Velour ruined drag. No, just kidding. It's like, we know...
Dr. Frankenfurter, on the main stage, your presentation cut the mustard. But your performance in the challenge really needs to catch up. You're safe.
Still better than Trixie Mattel.
Shut up.
No, but seriously, like, this is, like I said, this is the Tim Curry appreciation podcast now. That's all we're going to do.
It was so good. I'll also, while we're kind of on that, I do want to talk a little bit about the costumes.
Yes.
And the sort of whole production design of the film. It looks so good. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But what I love most about the costumes is, like, the costumes are amazing. They're beautiful. But they're beautiful in an almost, like, cheap-looking way, or, like, an attainable way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they feel very, like, it's that very punk aesthetic, right? It's, you made something beautiful out of, like, what you had lying around.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, all of these costumes are iconic. They're wonderful. Like, oh my gosh, all of Frank's looks.
Mm-hmm.
Columbia in her little gold top hat and tap shoes.
Yes.
Magenta, the French maid. Like, they're all iconic, but they also all look like costumes where I could run out to Party City and, like, spend $25 and be ready for Halloween as one of them.
Yeah, your local high school theater department, even if they have never done Rocky Horror, you can piece together those costumes with what they've got in their costume room.
Exactly. You might have to source a corset, but...
Yeah. But, like, exactly, it's like the costumes are distinctive. If you see a lineup of these people, like, you see them on Halloween, you see them at a party, you know that they're doing Rocky Horror. There's no... There's... Even if they tweak certain things, it's still, like, you know it's Rocky Horror because it's just so distinctive. But just generally, with all the production design in general, it is, like, it's beautiful, but it's not grandiose.
Yeah, even the house they're in, it's this beautiful old manor, but it's not done up how you would expect. It's not, like, full period piece or even, like, gothic horror, mm-hmm. like cobwebs everywhere. It's just like, it's the house where these weirdos have kind of landed it, and they've trashed it up a little bit. So it's a nice old house, but it's a weird old house.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, they really did the dang thing.
Is there anything else you liked about the movie and you want to shout out while we're in this shout out mode before we get probably back into discussion?
Probably. You know, it isn't necessarily, no, hold on. Before I talk about that, what I do need to shout out is, if you know me, you know that if a movie is a tight 90, it is automatically an additional 2 stars on it. I love that. This movie was not a tight 90, but it was a tight 100. And I think that's beautiful. Personally, yeah. I can't deal with, I'm just an impatient person. I can't deal with these 2 hour, 2.5 hour, 3 hour movies. I understand why movies are so long sometimes. But in general, if I go to look at a movie, if I go to watch a movie and I see that it says 90 minutes, it says 1.5 hours, it says 1 hour, 40 minutes, I'm a happy camper. I love that. I just need to shout that out because that is something, that is a thing about me that I appreciated about this movie. I went to watch it and I said, 100 minutes? I can do that.
It also doesn't feel that long.
No.
Because compared to, like, some musicals and musical movies I have seen, it is, like, wall-to-wall music for almost the first hour of it, mm-hmm. which is great. So, like, the story's moving on at a clip. There's always a fun little tune, you know, and there's always a new little tune coming through, so you're bopping along, you're loving it. It's not until kind of the first hour goes by that, for me, the movie starts to go off the rails a little bit, and this is, the point in the story that I'm thinking of is when Dr. Scott finally shows up, and at that point, that's when, like, none of the songs we're getting after that are, like, any of my favorites. That's when the songs come less frequently. It's a little more focused on the plot, which does not make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why it was really great when the first hour I wasn't really thinking about the plot. I was just like, oh, that's funny. Do-do-do, there's a song. I will say that is maybe the one downside of, because we both just watched the movie, we didn't see a performance or a shadow cast or anything. So we experienced the movie kind of in its purest form, without some of the extra, like, fun elements to pad over some of the parts where it's like, okay, this movie actually isn't that great.
Mm-hmm.
That was my major criticism rewatching the movie, was just like, oh, right, the last, like, 40 minutes, I don't need this, actually.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I get it. Like, that is kind of a common thing with musicals. Like, you see the act one and the act two soundtrack of a musical, and act two is always it shorter. You focus on the plot. It's, like, always, like, 40 minutes. Like, it's like, okay, we need to get stuff done. Like, we need to wrap everything up. But in this movie, when, as we have kind of been talking about, this movie is kind of just more about vibes instead of actually thinking about anything or caring about a plot. When the movie does decide to care about a plot, I'm like, but why? We could have just kept with the vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess the thing I was going to talk about before we went into plot was, I would say, not necessarily a shout out, but just something I was thinking is, I think maybe the show could have used a little bit more humor. It wasn't, like, dry and, like, sad and boring and stuff like that, but I don't know. I feel like maybe some humor could have helped, or maybe there is humor that is just kind of embedded in references that I don't understand because I am watching this for the first time in 2022, and maybe there are just kind of pop culture references and just general kind of with the vibes of the film things that I could have gotten more enjoyment out of and understood more if I were an original audience member in 75 or if I just knew a little bit more about the movie and the culture surrounding it.
I mean, in your defense, a lot of the things it references are like very niche, kind of obscure, like sci-fi movies from the 50s. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't even get, like, if there are pop culture references, I really don't get them.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to disagree with you, though, a little bit on this. I don't think this would have necessarily benefited from, like, a lot more jokes, necessarily. Mm-hmm. I think it does have a very dry, sort of very British sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Of just, you know, it's almost like a Oscar Wilde, like a farce
mm-hmm.
kind of thing, where it's, you know, Brad and Janet, the like strapping all-American couple, kind of putting on the brave face as just the weirdest stuff is going on around them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is both, like I said, a very sort of British sense of humor. And it's also very true to, you know, old like sci-fi monster movies. It's like these guys in these movies are very blasé when like some weird thing has crawled out of the tank and is terrorizing, you know, Los Angeles or whatever. So I can see where you might have wanted more like overt humor, but I think a lot of the humor in there comes from the kind of camp elements clashing with what could be a very, like, straightforward plot. It's almost like Brad and Janet, like, got in their little car on the way to, like, a real monster movie, and they, like, broke down in this one.
No, you know, I can definitely see where you're coming from. And I think, to some degree, I do agree with you. So, I think we've talked enough about, kind of all the things about the movie that we like, and we've just discussed it a little. I would like to dive in, if you will allow me, Matthew, to just like, you know, Cassie's media criticism minute, because I've got a couple issues with the film, but kind of calling back to what you said, you know, a little while ago in the conversation, how this movie, you know, kind of requires you to leave your brain at the door and is very much kind of vibes. I do want to talk about a couple of the things that I kind of saw in the movie that were maybe a little bit harder for me to get over, even though I knew that the movie didn't really pay attention to them and it wasn't really intending for the audience to pay attention to them. So, if you will
a new segment will please introduce our inaugural Media Criticism Minute.
Yeah, so it might be a little longer than a minute, but I will try and go fast. I'm just gonna...
No, I'm cutting you off at 60 seconds. Sharp. It's counting down.
Slay. Okay, so yeah, I'm gonna go through these, and yeah, I am just gonna let anyone know, any family or anything like that listening, I might say some words that you don't like, so just, you know, listen if you will, but also you can skip forward. So anyway, I will begin. So hi, welcome again to Cassie's Media Criticism Minute. Gonna put on my little media critic hat and talk about some stuff that I, wasn't a big fan of in this movie.
What does your media critic hat look like?
Well, of course, all media critics wear hats. Mine's a little beret. Very pretentious.
A little beret.
Very.
Okay, that's valid. Very that's pretentious. Valid. All right. I have the image now. Okay, go.
All right. So I guess I'll kind of go in ascending order of what I kind of noticed and what I had the biggest issues with. So I guess I'll start at the end. The ending of this movie is very incel-y. At the end of the movie, Riff Raff, one of the characters, one of the aliens, kills Frankenfurter, Rocky, and Columbia because they didn't like him. That is, you know, the reason that they end up dying. And, you know, Frank's death is the most kind of sensationalized. It is the main focal point. And it is, of course, in part because he is the main character, like we've talked about. Tim Curry is absolutely magnetic in the role. You want to look at him. Of course, we are going to care most about this character's death compared to Rocky or Columbia. But it also is in part because he is the most queer out of all the characters. Yeah, all the characters are kind of gay, but he is undoubtedly, like, the queerest of all of them. So when he died, I did kind of feel like, okay, of course he had to die. Of course they were going to kill him. He doesn't get a happy ending. He doesn't even get a neutral ending. He is the gayest one out of all of them. He has to die. And that was, you know, really unfortunate. And that's, you know, one of the thoughts I had leaving this movie. Another thing in this movie is that, you know, it is a sex comedy, but, you know, consent doesn't exist in this movie. You know, when Brad and Janet first originally, you know, enter the mansion, they are forcibly stripped. They are watched by others through what are presumably secret cameras. They are watched while they are undressed or they're having sex. Frank, he tries to trick both Brad and Janet respectively into having sex with him by disguising as the other's partner. And at the beginning of these encounters, they are kind of forceful and coercive. Even if consent is eventually given enthusiastically, it does kind of begin very kind of forceful and manipulative and kind of tricky. It's definitely like in the context of the film, I realized that, you know, the audience is not meant to believe and kind of sit with the idea of like, oh, you know, we just watched, you know, these people get attacked, or we watched them almost get attacked. We're, you know, kind of wanting to be like, you know, eventually they, you know, stop being so, you know, stuck up, and eventually, you know, they give their full consent. But of course we know that if this were taking place in another movie, but of course in the real world, this would be much different. We would kind of understand that, like, okay, this probably, you know, probably and or definitely was not consensual. You know, what, you know, Frank did was wrong. Again, in this context, in the film, it's not presented as wrong, but it is still like, consent doesn't exist in this movie. And then my third thing, you can interject.
May I just make a point?
Of course you may.
The devil's advocate. I think those particular scenes of like Brad and Janet with Frank in their rooms, those kind of mirroring scenes, I think, yes, they are on paper definitely troubling, but I also think that there's very clearly, like, something more going on in these scenes, like, subtextually or, like, thematically. I think I think another reason why this movie is so beloved is it's kind of inadvertently, or maybe extremely intentionally, like the ultimate gay revenge fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, haha, we took these normal people and we made them weird just like us.
Mm-hmm.
I think that speaks to a lot. And there's a very liberating aspect in kind of overall that, you know, their whole experience is so transformative.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a key part of it. And definitely the consent angle is definitely troubling to look at from a modern perspective. But the other part of that that I think is important to remember is, like, we love Tim Curry and we love Frank. We have talked about that he is absolutely the villain of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is Brad and Janet's story and he is their antagonist. So, I don't know. I think I am maybe more willing to excuse it. One, because I think it fits somewhere thematically. And two, it's like, well, yeah, obviously the mad scientist is going to do some messed up things.
Mm-hmm. And no, I definitely get that. Like I said, like within the context of the movie, kind of those scenes are supposed to be, you know, very liberating because eventually, you know, they do give their consent and then they are, you know, changed. And it's not in a, like, you know, trauma way. It's in a, you know, oh, I'm free now, and I learned about this new thing in myself, and I'm being transformed.
Literally the next thing Janet does after, like, sleeping with Frank is she goes and sleeps with Rocky.
Exactly. So, like...
Which, I mean, good for you, girl.
Mm-hmm, exactly. I mean, that, like I said, like, I understand why... In the movie itself, it's presented differently. I am just also speaking to, from a modern perspective, it's like, ooh, okay, that does, you know, that isn't entirely okay. And it doesn't entirely sit well. So that's where I was going with that. But
yeah, no.
I'll move on to my third point, which I did kind of find the most troubling. It was probably the thing that I was... least able to shake. I kind of was able to shake it because, like I'll talk about in a second, it didn't entirely fit into this trope that I'm about to speak about, but it was kind of that thing where anytime I saw a scene with Rocky, I did kind of think about this. And so the trope that I'm speaking of is called Born Sexy Yesterday. And there's a great video by Pop Culture Detective on this. You should just go watch, like, all of the stuff on this channel. Like, I love his media criticism. Like, his videos are amazing. I think they're really great. Like I said, I love media criticism in general, but I really do like his videos and kind of his take on stuff. And so basically, for those who don't know, Born Sexy Yesterday is a trope in media where, and I'll use gendered language for this initial definition, but then we'll go into how it's a little different in Rocky Horror Picture Show. But it's basically
because I know the trope and I know where you're getting at, and yeah, gender plays a big role in, like, why I, as well as you, I think as well, don't see this trope 100% fitting where it seems like it might.
Exactly.
And gender is a huge part of that.
Exactly. So basically, Born Sexy Yesterday is when there is a female character in a movie who is an adult woman with an adult female sexualized body, who, while being, you know, an adult physically, in some aspect, whether that being her naivety, her being... in a new place, her innocence, her lack of experience, essentially has the mind of a child. And the her male interest will continue to see her as a sexualized adult woman, and he will find her, you know, sexually appealing, not in spite of her childlike mind, but because of it. And so he kind of will take on this very strange and incredibly upsetting kind of mixture of like father figure and sexual partner. And so generally this trope is just really gross because it's kind of, it's predatory, but you know, it can be excused because she's, you know, she's actually an adult, but she has in some way, she has the mental capacity or the experience or naivety, like I talked about, of a child. So it's very upsetting and kind of, once you see it, it's one of those things that's hard to unsee. Some of the examples, because this shows up in a lot of places, you can see it in the Little Mermaid. Like, she is literally a fish out of water. She is, you know, she is an adult, but she doesn't know how to do anything. She doesn't know how to talk. And, you know, she is, you know, the prince falls in love with her, not in spite of this, but in part because of this. We can also see it in, you know, the new Wonder Woman movies. You know, Diana is completely, you know, unaware of the mortal world, and she's unaware of the kind of sexual impact that she has on the men around her. And Steve kind of has to, you know, coach her through this, and again, kind of takes on that weird mixture, that really, you know, gross mixture of a father figure and lover. And this can be seen in a lot of other movies too. So that was something that I was thinking about a lot with Rocky. But there are a couple of reasons why you could say that Rocky and Rocky Horror Picture Show in general doesn't exactly fit this trope. One of these can be said is that everyone in the movie is sexualized. Rocky is not the only one. Of course, he is very blatantly sexualized, but so is everyone else. Like,
this is one of the horniest movies ever made.
Literally. Like, there's not a character in the movie who is a prude at the beginning and a prude at the end and never does anything, never changes. You know, they all, you know, they're all sexualized.
That's why this is such a love of the theater kids, because what's a hornier demographic in America than the theater kids?
You can't name it. You can't. But yeah, so that's one thing. You can also say that this also doesn't apply to Rocky because it is not his innocence that makes him sexual, as is kind of a key part of this trope. Another thing in the, as we were kind of talking about earlier, is with gender. Obviously, the way that we culturally think about male versus female sexuality and the way it's portrayed in film, it's quite different. In the general kind of typical female version of the Born Sexy Yesterday, she's, you know, she's very childlike and she's, you know, she's innocent, she's naive, she doesn't know anything, she kind of needs this leadership, whereas kind of in the male version that you might see, which you could, you know, say that Rocky fits into, he isn't childlike, he's almost kind of brutish and animalistic and primitive, and that's where his sexuality comes from. It's not because he doesn't know anything, it's because all he knows is sex. Just kind of wrapping up the thought, it's like, it doesn't completely fit this trope, but it also, I don't think, has enough separation that I was able to be like, well, it doesn't really fit, and it's totally fine. So that is kind of something that stuck in my head kind of for a lot of the film.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, that's a really interesting analysis of it. The trope in general kind of reminds me of that old screenwriting cliche of like, she's beautiful, but she doesn't know it. I think that's part of the appeal of the character who is meant to be like the Born Sexy Yesterday, is it's like the male character and sort of the male audience gazing gets to like enjoy the beauty, but that person, that character, doesn't have like the agency to be able to act knowing that they're beautiful. And I think one of the main reasons why Rocky doesn't quite fit it for me is because like the point of that character in the story is to be a sex object.
Mm-hmm.
Is like Frank's whole thing is like, I'm trying to make the hottest guy so we can go have weird sex together and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to stop you. I'm going to stop you for just one millisecond. You're saying, you know, he's trying to make the hottest guy. In my personal opinion, men should not be allowed to be blonde. That's for women. That's for women. What do you need to be blonde for? That is all.
Funny. While we're just talking, while we're on this weird tangent, I found it really funny looking back. I don't know what it is about social media, but like I looked at Rocky and I'm like, you're not that big.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, you could find like a gym rat on, I don't know, I feel like you could find a gym rat on Insta who's like way bigger than Rocky Horror is.
Easily.
Times they are changing. But you know, I think the main thing is like Rocky Horror is Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
It's Frankenstein, but what if Frankenstein's monster was like a hot dude?
Mm-hmm.
And like the doctor kind of wanted to have sex with the monster. Mm-hmm. Like that's the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is ultimately. And so I think that's why the trope doesn't like really fit for me.
Mm-hmm.
I will say though, as it is, it doesn't say a lot of great things about gay people.
No, exactly.
Or about trans people, which whether or not you read Frankenfurter as a trans character is an interesting discussion to have, although I do think he embodies a lot of maybe the worst ideas people have about trans people.
Yeah, I think that was the first thing that you notice about Frankenfurter is just like, oh, you're someone's, like, nightmare because you embody just people's just worst fears about gender.
Truly, it's... But it's also... See, here's the other thing. It's like, it's very complicated. It didn't quite work out, but I really wanted to get one of my, like, trans friends on to do this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Just timing didn't work out, because that's what happens when you're an adult and you have adult responsibilities.
Yep.
But it's really complicated because, like, on the one hand, it's like Frankenfurter looks like every, like, right-wing nightmare of what a trans person is.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it's like the experience of Rocky Horror and this kind of liberating has actually been kind of like liberating, and in some cases like the impetus for some people to realize it's, oh, I'm not the gender I was assigned at birth, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Or for a lot more people of like, oh, I'm not straight, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this very weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's also kind of why I like Rocky Horror, is that it is, for as much as it's a, like, just go with the flow kind of movie, it is a complicated movie to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the one hand, like, the main character, who everyone loves, is kind of horrifying, but also, in a weird way, kind of... aspirational is absolutely the wrong word. Almost a little inspirational.
Mm-hmm.
In this, like, total complete abandonment of societal norms, living by your own vibes, and, you know, giving yourself over to absolute pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Just doing what makes you happy. Even if what makes him happy is, like, making human beings and, like, murdering people. We haven't talked about the multiple murders he commits.
We haven't. What I'm going to say to that thing, again, kind of talking about this trope, and it concerns Frankenfurter, but I think it does also concern Janet. But it is kind of the, like, is your happiness at the expense of others, that other being Rocky?
Ooh, That's interesting.
Because another thing that I was thinking, you know, kind of in this trope, another thing that I was thinking about was I took a gothic and vampire literature class a couple of semesters ago, and we read Dracula, and one of the papers I had to write was about new versus true womanhood. And one of the things that they talk about in true womanhood and kind of what is supposed to be, you know, the proper ideal woman, you know, what a woman of the upper classes should be, is kind of when she's obviously a caregiver, but kind of the only time that she is kind of able to have power over men is when she is fulfilling the role of a nurse. And I kind of thought of that when Janet goes to Rocky and she rips the bottom of her slip to kind of bandage up, like, I think it's his hand. And mm-hmm. then them kind of proceeding to have sex, kind of coupled with everything. That was another thing where I'm like, I can't even say that it was only Frank doing it. It was also Janet. Like, you know, Janet kind of is also playing into this. And I can't say again that Rocky, whether in his relationship with Frank or his relationship with Janet, completely fits into the Born Sexy Yesterday trope, but personally, it's a little too close for comfort for me.
I kind of wonder if we're maybe almost meant to draw kind of a parallel between Frank and Janet. Mm. There's an interesting parallel that brought up for me, where it's like Frank's happiness is like utterly dependent on Rocky, to the point where like the reason Riff and Magenta try and take over at the end is they're like, we want to go back home. Like, we're tired of this. We're tired of just playing your games and like being your pawns. Can we leave, please? And meanwhile, like, Janet's whole thing is, yeah, I feel like maybe she is using Rocky in that scene, which I love that song, by the way.
Hot Girl Summer. Such a touch me. That's what she was having.
Yes, that's a great song. Mm-hmm. Like, she is kind of using Rocky in that moment, yes. But I get the feeling, like, she would have gone to Brad in that moment and done the same thing. Like, I get the feeling that, like, her thing is, like, she has found, it's like, oh, I can do this thing that makes me happy. And it didn't feel like it was necessarily dependent. Like, it didn't feel like in that her pleasure was, like, dependent on Rocky in the same way that Frank so obviously is.
No, I agree. Yeah, you make a really good point. Like, she is kind of, like, she could have sung that song about anyone. But, you know, Frank could not have sung I'll Make You a Man about anyone.
Janet's just a liberated modern woman. And all it took to get there was for a weird dude to feel her up.
Hey. You know, I'm just gonna not comment.
Yeah, I said that intending to wrap this up, and now I feel really weird about having that be the last thing we say before the wrap up.
You know what? I say, let's just do the wrap up anyway. We're here. Let's just do it.
You know, if you've learned nothing from our discussion, know that Rocky Horror is fun. And it's a vibe, and it has an interesting cultural place that I think warrants this level of media criticism we have applied to it. And criticism does not mean we don't like it.
Exactly.
I love this movie. I think it's fun. It's spoopy season. Go enjoy it.
Exactly. We hope that you have enjoyed our podcast today. We hope that we have analyzed this movie too much, but also just enough. We hope that you go out, watch Rocky Horror, see a shadow cast. And
seriously, this is my actual, like, PSA real quick. Go see a shadow cast. or like a midnight screening or whatever, this movie is very fun. It is much more fun when you're with like 50 very drunk people in the middle of the night screaming and throwing things. Although I don't think people throw things at the screen much anymore. Because just extra work for janitors.
We respect custodial staff.
You don't throw your toast anymore. You just kind of hold it up, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah. You know what? That's the energy that we need to bring to the rest of 2022 and onward. Respect custodial staff. And on that note, again, thank you very much for listening to our podcast. Please like and follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to us. Follow us on Instagram. And we hope that you have a very safe flight back to Transylvania.
Patience.